scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left.
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aguila's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, it is a Tuesday, March 4th. Trade deadline week is well underway. Deadline Friday, 3 Eastern, 1 Mountain. Lots to get into, lots to dive into, and lots still to come between now and the trade deadline. Pat Steinberg along with you on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com. Flames Talk is available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's a Tuesday. That means it's time to chat with our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli. He's brought to you, as always, by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, DailyFaceoff.com, Amazon, and a whole lot more. Mr. Saravalli, it is the final week of sleep deprivation. Trade deadline week is upon us. How we feeling? When does the I need a nap sign come out?
It's been out. I'm surviving. I'm feeling pretty good. Like, all things considered, I'm upright and and operational, so I'm good.
That's what I like to hear. Broad question to kick it off. What are you expecting between this conversation and Friday afternoon from the Calgary Flames?
I'm expecting a lot of monitoring. I think they'd like to try and find lowercase ways to improve this team. I think they have lower-end draft capital. I think they've keyed in, and Craig Conroy is very aware. I think they know that a third-round pick has an 11% chance of playing in the NHL, for instance, that they're willing to use some of those lower-end picks and lower-end prospects if they can, to find slight ways to improve this team. It's not going to be a massive upgrade, but they're lurking, and they want to understand exactly what the market is for all those players that are on the trade targets board. And then in the meantime, I can assure you and know for fact that someone like a JJ Paterka comes available, the Calgary Flames are making a call. So they're all over everything. We'll see what they get done.
What are the chances Dan Vladar gets moved between now and the deadline? Now that we're into trade deadline week, we've talked about him at different times throughout the year, but what are the chances now that he gets moved in the next few days?
I'd put it at 10%, maybe even a little less.
Okay.
I just don't think there's a big market for him in particular, and that's not a knock on him. I think he's been put in some tough spots this year. He was asked to do a lot of heavy lifting while Dustin Wolf was getting his feet wet, and his numbers have not been great. And I think everyone's intrigued by the size and, you know, what that could mean, and could he get his entire game back in order? That said, I'm very surprised that the San Jose Sharks have a taker or think they have a taker for Vitek Vanacek.
Yeah.
$3.4 million, no salary retention slots left. I don't know what they're getting, what they think they're getting, what the market is. Outside of Edmonton and Carolina, I don't know of another team looking for a goalie. So unless someone is doing a Mackenzie Blackwood-like thing where non-playoff team wants to grab someone for the future and wants to see if they can rehab his game – unless that's happening, I'm not seeing it. So I think there's even less of a market for someone like Vladar.
Which, and you know, I'm kind of the opinion that, you know, unless you're getting something that is really, really nice in return, just go with the tandem that's gotten you here to this point. So,
right. Why don't I? I think about this all the time. Don't bleep with happy. Like, if Wolf right. and Vladar are working fine together, as much as you are intrigued about seeing Cooley at the NHL level and believe he deserves it, I don't know that right now is the exact moment in time to upset the apple cart.
Yeah, and you've always got next season. You can always decide to move on from Dan Vladar in the offseason. I'm with you on that front.
And I wouldn't be shocked if the number was right if, again, they re-signed him.
I think that, from everything I understand, that's still very much on the table, too. Like, there's that could
They've
very
talked.
Well be the case.
They've talked a bunch. I think at varying points this year, the asking price for Vladar was higher than they feel comfortable with. But if you could get Dan Vladar on 2.25 or 2.5, I don't see anything wrong with him being your backup at yeah. that number.
Yep. It all kind of comes down to whether or not he wants to accept being a backup to Dustin Wolf, or if he still has eyes on potentially fighting for more playing time and a number one, I don't know if number one, but more of a tandem type job going forward. That in a
yeah,
lot of ways,
where's that
going to
be though?
That I don't
what's
know.
That money, like,
yeah. That I have less answers to in this conversation. Do you see a realistic world where a bigger Flames name gets moved here? And they've had such difficulty scoring on this road trip, and yet they're still tied for a playoff spot. Like, it seems quite unlikely that we'd see one of those bigger name veterans moved, which is kind of in the party line all year long.
I would say there's almost a 0% chance. It's not zero, but it's close.
Yeah. So in saying that, is it a bad thing if the Flames just decide to stand pat? If really they don't do anything at all between now and the deadline and they just decide, hey, this is the group that's got us here, we're going to stay true to that, is that a bad thing for the Flames this year?
How could that be a bad thing? I think if anything, it's the ultimate sign of respect for this group that's worked their arses off to put themselves in this position.
Mm-hmm.
They came into this year with zero respect, zero expectations, and they are holding down a playoff spot in March.
Yep.
And they've got an opportunity to pull off the unexpected, which is why I think they want to reward them in a small way. Also, as a culture thing, I think this Jake Evans signing today in Montreal was a critical example of that. The last thing you want to do if you're the Montreal Canadiens or the Calgary Flames or pick another team that's going through this process and knocking on the door of the playoffs a little bit sooner than some people had expected, but you wanted to take a step. If you were to, and this is what Montreal was staring down, if you want to get this close, be a point out in their case, and then trade Jake Evans, what message does that send to Cole Caulfield, Lane Hudson, Juraj yeah. Slepkovsky? Yeah. Hey, these games don't matter. This season doesn't matter. You know what that gets you at some point? You become the Buffalo Sabres. And I think any team in the league should want to avoid sending that kind of statement, which if you go back to Craig Conroy's initial press conference when he took over, he harped on that multiple times, that the want to win and continue to be competitive in a year in which they're not really expected to be, I don't know that this year could have worked out any better for them. And I know fans hate to hear that because they wanted to, let's quote, do this right. Let's take this down to the studs and work our way back up. I don't know if they could do that first off. And I don't know what you could point to in history in the NHL to say, yeah, that team has done it and done it well. I think you have a much better chance to try and do it like the Washington Capitals are right now than to tear it all the way down and build it back up again.
I promise I will not hold you to this, but over under.
Someone will.
No, I nobody hold Frank to this because it's just a fun question. But over under 1.5 trades made by Craig Conroy between now and Friday. What's your gut say?
I'll say under. I'll say he makes one trade between now and Friday.
Okay. Frank Saravalli's with us. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. It's our last chat with Frank prior to the trade deadline on this Tuesday. We do have a deal involving an Alberta team. We talked last week about why Trent Frederick is such an intriguing player at this year's deadline. You gave a really nice breakdown as to why, and it's the Oilers who go out and get him from Boston. They also bring in Max Jones. How do you feel about Edmonton's acquisition of Frederick? What does he bring that they don't have?
He brings a different element. He's got size, he can skate, and he can be a pain to play against. And the Oilers don't have many of those guys, so he's not afraid to mix it up, but he can also score. He can play center. He can play wing. I mean, last year, 18 goals and 40 points. I think with this acquisition, though, he's also kind of expensive. Second, fourth, Shane Lachance is a quality prospect that was a late bloomer, took some time to come into his own, and has really become something at Boston University as a sophomore captain. He's the first sophomore captain in Boston University history since his grandfather and Jack Parker. So they did give up some pieces in order to do this, but there's a method to their madness in Edmonton. It's not just getting Trent Frederick, it's getting him for a quarter of his cap hit, mm-hmm. 500 and some thousand bucks, so that they can preserve all their rights to continue to do whatever else that's up their sleeve. Meaning, if you want to put Evander Kane on LTIR and use that money, you could do that. If you want to put Trent Frederick on LTIR with his injury and then be back at square one again, you could do that. They still have roughly $500,000 in cap space to spend, which, depending if you go out and get another $2 million player, you could make something like that happen without having to put Kane on LTIR. So they've got a few different options, and I think they'd still like to improve their secondary scoring. I think they'd like to add a depth defenseman. They've got other things, other irons in the fire, and trading for Trent Frederick didn't remove any of those other possibilities.
What of those things you mentioned in Edmonton, secondary scoring or depth on defense, what's the bigger need for them?
For me, it's a true defender in every sense of the word. He's not like a perfect fit, but think along the lines of the way Brandon Carlo plays.
Okay.
Size, good stick, all those different aspects that comes with his game. He's not flashy by any stretch of the imagination, but they don't need flash. They need substance. And he's doesn't have the same ability as Matthias Ekholm, but certainly I think would be a welcomed addition based on what he brings. So that would be the type of stylistic fit that I think Edmonton is looking for.
We talked last week about Vancouver and Brock Besser. He slots in. By the way, Frank's final trade targets board is available, up to 45 names over at Daily Faceoff, and ranking number 12.
Not final.
Oh, is there one more to come?
Two more, Thursday and Friday.
Oh,
so
wow.
I've got a list of five new names in my notepad on my phone to add as we continue to chip away at this never-ending 6,000-word story.
Oh, I thought this was the final one. Okay, so there's still more to come from from Frank's trade targets board over at Daily Faceoff. Okay, then I will retract and restate. Your current trade targets board has Brock Besser at number 12. We talked about him last week, but now that we're right up on the deadline, what's your read on what the Canucks decide to do there?
My read is that they'll make one best and final offer and then leave it up to the way Brock Besser answers that as to what they do next. The other thing that Vancouver needs to ask themselves is how much of a priority should be placed on making the playoffs this season. If that's the case, I can envision a world in which they make an offer to Brock Besser, even if he doesn't accept, that they then use the final 4 months of the season to try and convince him to stay and use him to take a run at this last wild card spot against the Flames. And by the way, the St. Louis Blues and Utah Hockey Club, who are all still very much in the mix.
Yeah.
So that's their thought process. It's, if I were to shade these things on a pie chart, I would say 40% chance he extends, 25% chance that he does not extend but is not traded prior to Friday. So that's a 65% chance that he stays, mm-hmm. and a 35% chance that he's traded.
Okay. Couple of other names that are very interesting. Brock Nelson has been sitting number one on that list or close to the top on your trade targets board for a while. How likely is it in your mind that Brock Nelson, who was a Team USA player at the Four Nations, how likely is it that he gets dealt here?
I think pretty likely. I mean, he's number one for a reason. And league sources indicate that the Islanders have been much more receptive in recent days to making a move. And if you think he's an Islander and needs to stay, re-sign him on July 1st. I know that so rarely happens, but that has to be the play. Extending Brock Nelson and or Kyle Palmieri, two 33-year-olds turning 34, for a non-playoff team that desperately needs assets to either package to go get difference makers or to try and draft and develop, they need all the help they can get. And this year just isn't doing it. So I'd keep an eye on a team like the Winnipeg Jets. I still think Brock Nelson is the best fit for them. I know there's been, you know, some chatter between the Jets and the Caps and some other teams that are kind of lapping the field with their running away with their divisions. Should we do something big? Should we not tinker? It's, you know, they look back in history and they say sometimes the teams that go on and win have done the least at the deadline. I think it's, for a team like the Winnipeg Jets, it's put up or shut up time. They're approaching territory not all that dissimilar to the Leafs, where I don't care how good your regular season is. Yep. You've got to make it happen in the playoffs. And I think there's some pressure with that. They've proven in the past it's not hard for them to trade for players. It's hard to keep them. And I think they'd have a pretty good shot with Brock Nelson, the other Brock from Minnesota, to keep a guy like him.
Lots of buzz surrounding number two on your trade board as well. Scott Laughton of the Flyers. There is that cryptic social media, maybe not so cryptic social media post. What are we thinking happens with Laughton and the Flyers?
Man, this is the time of year where people get caught up in the spin cycle. And my belief the entire time has been the first team to put a first-round pick on the table for Scott Laughton gets him. And I believe the Flyers told Scott Laughton last week to somewhat expect a trade, that it's probably pretty likely that if they get the right deal that it's going to happen. Hence the Last Supper imagery from his potential final road trip as a Flyer in Winnipeg. John Tortorella, their coach, hinted at the idea of we need to get value for these guys. We need to improve. And it's a somewhat thin center market. The difference between Brock Nelson and Scott Laughton, I think, is rather sizable in their impact and their production. But in the end, with Scott Laughton having the extra year, I think it's caused some teams to, you know, give them some pause. Should we, if we're going to spend, should we get the guy that's already extended for 1 year at $3 million, or do we go with the higher end guy and the higher acquisition cost that's a rental? So lots to consider, but I think if the Flyers the Flyers are ready to make something happen. I know that. Will they get the right deal? That's the bigger question.
Are we going to be busy on Friday?
I think so. I mean, when you consider 9 of the 16 playoff teams right now have not made a deal, tells me that there's a lot of runway left. What are the Tampa Bay Lightning up to?
Yeah.
What are the LA Kings up to? Are they really going to go into a fourth straight first round meeting with the Edmonton Oilers and lose again?
Yeah. I am. I'm looking forward to it. I'm. Your notifications are on every day, but you know, turn the notifications on for Frank over the next week if you don't have them on already. Looking forward to your coverage on Friday. Maybe I'll try to bribe you to see if you got 10, 15 minutes for us on Friday post deadline as well. But be well, pal.
I might be in a ditch by then. But
yeah,
we'll see.
If you're not face down in a ditch or in a coma. Or halfway down a bottle of Glenlivet, then we'll try to get you on. But otherwise, good luck. Enjoy as best you can the final run to the deadline, my friend. And great stuff leading up to it. We'll talk to you maybe Friday. If not, we'll definitely talk next Tuesday. Thank you, pal.
Sounds good, Pat. See ya.
He is Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL Insider. He joins us every Tuesday here on Flames Talk, and he joins us for South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg and Vickers on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. It's Tuesday, March 4th. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Vix, one of the biggest mysteries this season for the Flames has been the, I think, significant downturn in the play of Yegor Sharangovic. Sharangovic, who is into his second year as a member of the Flames, coming off a career season last year. As you always like to say, we call them career seasons for a reason. Sometimes. But after being a healthy scratch in Sunday's loss in Carolina, he's back in the lineup Tuesday against Philadelphia, which I don't think we're surprised by that. I think it seemed like a one game only thing.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of a wake up call to him and a little bit of a message sending to the team as a whole after how that game in Florida had gone the day prior. So he comes back in, makes sense to bring him back in. But I don't think there's any doubt this is a massively disappointing year for Sharangovic based on last year. And it's also a very troubling year for him, knowing the contract that's about to kick in next season. He's on the final year of the deal that he signed last with New Jersey before being dealt. And he has a 5-year contract extension that kicks in next year. Now, I'm still very much in favor of the theory of signing Sharangovic to that contract extension. Flames made it official on July 1st, and I thought, you know, I'm one of those guys that always leans towards the pragmatic, potential good cap move. And I think by locking a guy in with cost certainty can always be, and to get out in front of something, I think always has benefits. And so, yes, a little bit of risk on a 5-year extension for sure, but I generally like that decision to sign Sharangovic to the extension on Canada Day. What I don't like is the, you know, 50-plus games that he's played since, or most of the 50-plus games
Fair.
He's played since. He's got 22 points in 52 games, 11 goals in that stretch. What are we seeing from Sharangovic? Why has it been such a massively disappointing season?
Well, Pat, this is going to sound so rehearsed. It's not so much what we're seeing, it's what we're not seeing out of Sharangovic. He hasn't been able to get to the inside. He hasn't used his size. And to be fair, I don't think he's ever necessarily used a 6'2" frame like a bull driving to the front of the net, but hasn't gotten to the dirty areas. And to your point, his shot is his best weapon, and we haven't seen him use it quite enough. And at the time of the signing, he was a freshly turned 26-year-old who was coming off of a career year, yes, 31 goals in 82 games last season for the Flames. But even two seasons prior to that, he had 24 goals in 76 games with the New Jersey Devils. So that's like a 26-ish goal pace. So even if he regresses to be a perennial 25 goal scorer and just happen to have a career year of 30, you're okay with that number. Now, the fact of the matter remains, he's on pace for 16 this year, and it's not as if it's a snake-bitten 16-goal season. Like, he's not doing the things, from my perspective anyway, that made him such an effective shooter. Again, yeah. We were talking about the Flames' leading goal-getter a year ago, and it's just been, whether it's a hangover from the injury to start off this season, I mean, I'm not necessarily going to put a whole lot of stock into that, being so far removed from that. But, like, is this just a case where he's an every second year type of player? 24 goals in 76 games in 21-22 with the Devils, like I said. 13 goals in 75 games the year after that. Rebounds to 31 goals over an 82-game schedule in his first season with the Flames. And now he's on pace for 16. Like, is it just a set and forget every second year? That's probably an easy, lazy narrative. But, like, he's just, from my perspective, he's not doing the things that made him effective last year, and part of that is his shot. 2.18 shots per game last year, down to 1.86 this year. It doesn't sound significant, but it is. And if you want to look at his most recent stretch that ended him up in the press box, 11 shots in the past 9 games. Not enough from a guy whose number one asset is that shot.
There's a few things. I mean, I do think the injury impacted him more than perhaps it might impact other players. And let me tell you why. I think him starting the season hurt. Remember, he got hurt in the final preseason game.
Final 5 minutes of the last preseason game.
So, and that knocked him out for a good chunk of the start of the season. What, he ended up missing 8 games to start the season. And he came back on the back foot. I think maybe came back a little early just in terms of I think maybe he rushed himself back. Not physically, but just in terms of pace and timing and that type of stuff. So you go from preseason, ready to start the year, get hurt, miss time, come back, and you're off of it, and you're not at the same pace as everybody else, and now you're not scoring, and now pucks aren't going in, and now you're not generating, and you're not being a generally effective player. And so with this player, more than other players, I do think confidence plays a very positive and negative factor in what we see from him. So the injury, I think, messed with the confidence, and I think he's had a lot of trouble getting the confidence side of things back to where he needs. And so that's a big reason why I think he's had such a rough year. I just don't think he's feeling very good about his game. And when he's kind of not feeling good about how he's playing or not super confident about the way things are going, I think that it impacts him more than maybe it does other players. And as such, that's why I think the injury maybe has affected him more, less physically, more mentally. And it feels like, and that's not an excuse. This is kind of my read on it. And I think that's kind of played a big part in terms of what we've seen.
I'll concede that. And maybe I didn't flesh out my point. Like, I don't think it's a lingering injury situation that's held him back, but I will buy stock in your idea that because of the injury and coming back and not feeling it right off the start and maybe not being 100% up to pace, 100% healthy, but not 100% up to pace, affected his confidence, and it's been a trickle-down effect from that. I can buy stock in that. Now, having said that, we're talking about a player who is still, only 3 teammates have outscored him over the course of the last 10 Flames games. Kadri's got 10 points in 10 games. Huberdeau has 8 points in 10 games. Mackenzie Weegar has 8 points in 10 games. Then you've got a shelf of Sharangovich, Coronado, and Pospisil, who each have 4 points over that span since February 1. Of course, Sharangovich only played 9 games. The other guys have played 10 by way of that healthy scratch. But it's not even so much the points I would point to. It's the impact you have on the game. And there are large stretches, whether, you know, they can extend multiple games where you don't really notice Sharangovich in a positive manner, not just even catching glimpses of shifts. And to me, that's like we talked about in the first hour, the Frost and Farabee and the confidence issue, not necessarily confidence issue, but how confidence can play a role in what you produce and what you don't produce. I can get on board with Sharangovich struggling with that confidence. And as a result, we're seeing less production, less impact, less overall not even necessarily taking over a game, because I don't think that's necessarily his skill set, but his shot can certainly impact a game in a heartbeat, and we just haven't seen that much this season.
I mean, you take a look at some of the other metrics. I mean, they're just down across the board. His 5-on-5 metrics, this is the least 5-on-5 points per game, or points per 60, rather, in his NHL career. Last year, in his 3 years with the New Jersey Devils, points per 60, all higher than this year. It's the lowest goals per 60 he's ever had at 5-on-5 in his career. Lowest expected goals he's ever had in his career. Lowest individual shot attempts per 60.
You got any good news over there?
Scoring chances per 60. High danger scoring chances per 60. This is a down year for Sharon Govich. And the thing that balances it a little bit, it's also the lowest 5-on-5 shot shooting percentage he's ever had. Coming off his highest ever, he was just under 17% in his 5-on-5 shooting percentage last year. He's at 5.2% this year. So a more than 10% drop in his 5-on-5 shooting percentage, which also plays into what we're seeing. But I do think your point about the impact is the most important part. He's never been a hard-nosed physical player or anything like that, but you do expect him to not lose as many puck battles as he's losing. On this road trip, it has been like clockwork, and I actually quite like the player, but it has been like clockwork on this road trip that this guy kills an offensive cycle and kills an offensive possession because he easily loses a puck battle. And that has happened multiple times. It happened all game against Florida. It happened all game against Carolina. And so that, and Ryan Huska talks about it. Like, he's never going to be a guy who wins the majority of physical battles. That's not who he is as a player. But you still need to dig in with your stick. You still need to be ready to win pucks back or win pucks in 50-50 battles, even if you're not a physical guy. And in the final two-thirds of last season, Vix, we saw that. We know he can do it. And so do we see it in the final 22 games? Well, if the answer is yes, then that gives the Flames a much better chance of making the playoffs. If he doesn't, well, then he doesn't, and the offensive issues continue, and they're going to continue regardless, I think. But the concerning thing is what you mentioned earlier. There's kind of two concerning things for me about Sharon Govich. One is the contract that kicks in next year for sure. The other is the fact that he has had this tendency of going good year, bad year. From a consistency standpoint, I think Sharon Govich has got to buck a trend at some point, and I think he's got to prove that he's not a wildly inconsistent guy game to game, month to month, and definitely season to season.
That board battle thing can be supremely frustrating when you layer on the fact that he's only one of two players in your top nine that is larger than 6 feet. And yes, for the sake of how the Flames are going to line up Tuesday against the Philadelphia Flyers, Pospisil is another, but typically you would imagine you'd want to flip Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil at some point, the other being Jonathan Huberto. So when you're losing that many board battles, that speaks to compete to me. And nobody's expecting Sharon Govich to be Peter Forsberg out there and just being a machine on the wall and down low. But you've got to come away with the size that you have, 6'2", 200 pounds. You've got to come away with, again, you don't even need to win 50%, but try to be as close to 50 as you can. To me, that's one of the telling signs, and I shouldn't even say telling, because he's never historically been great in that facet of the game. But I can understand how, from a coaching perspective or a fan perspective, you'd get frustrated with a guy that has that size. That again, a lot of plays on the cycle are killed because you're not winning your board battles, and then it just flips over to everything you just said, which not a whole lot of it was great news in terms of every single offensive metric is per 60 minutes, his worst in his NHL career.
Yep.
I don't know I don't think it's a light switch situation where all of a sudden he wakes up one morning and is back to a 30 goal pace. I don't know what the steps are, but I don't mind him coming out of the lineup and then going immediately back into the lineup and say, hey, we're trying to give you a wake up call here. We need more from you. Please deliver in any facet you think you can do that. To me, it's primarily a shot and working himself into quiet areas in the offensive zone to get off that shot. Will we see it against the Flyers? I don't know. But this is a worrying trend when we're talking about 60 games into the season for the Flames, 52 games into the season for Sharon Govich.
A few texts, 960. This says bad signing, 1 year wonder.
Well, again, he's
now a 2-time 20 goal scorer, right? And a 1-time 30 goal scorer.
Well, I mean, 2-time 24 goal scorer. And if you had played him a full season, he's north of 25.
Was that semantics, what you just did there right there?
I don't know. Is it? I mean, to me, there's a difference between being a 25 goal scorer and a 20 goal scorer.
Fair. I mean, it is.
I mean, we're talking 20%.
And it also is. It's,
Patrick.
I think it gets you to a different. Like, if you go significantly over, like a few goals over 20 twice in your career, now I think we can safely say, even though it's probably not going to happen this year, we can safely say Yegor Sharangovich is a 20 goal threat in this league. I think that's fair. Yeah.
I won't semantics you on that one. Even his rookie season, he had 16 goals in 54 games. I haven't done the math on a goal per game
basis. That would be over 20, though.
That's over 20 for sure, and that's knocking in that 25-goal range.
This reads, at what point does the needle start to point at the coach for all these players underplaying their goals per game and points per game? Well, Sharangovich had a career year with Huska. Blake Coleman had a career year with Huska. Nazem Kadri just missed 30 goals with Huska.
Mackenzie Weegar had 20 as a defenseman.
Weegar had 20 goals. So that's hard to say because that's hard to buy completely because you had a bunch of guys pop off offensively in year one. And yes, this year there have been some guys who are well off their paces, but you're also seeing Huberdeau have a significantly more productive year than he had last year. And he's going to be a much, we assume that he gets past his 55 points. He is their leading scorer this year. You've got Nazem Kadri, who's having another generally productive year by his standards. But it has not been the year for some guys than compared to what we saw from them last year. Sharangovich and Coleman would be the two guys I think you point at first when it comes to their offensive numbers. Matt Coronato is scoring and is having himself a pretty decent year. And this reads, Sharangovich got paid. He doesn't have to try hard now. That's from Dan in Southern Alberta. To me, that's one of the most overplayed narratives.
Yeah. Like, sure, you have financial security, but you also have gotten to this level for a reason. I don't even want to toss out like the pride element of it. It's not like you just, all right, I got a 5-year deal. Time to shut her down.
That is, I'm with you. That's a very overplayed thing in my mind. I don't typically buy into it either. It's Steinberg and Vickers with you on this hour of Flames Talk. It's a couple quick hits. Dustin Wolf gets the start Tuesday against Philadelphia, so he goes Sunday and Tuesday. Easily could have been Vladar, and that's kind of a really good indication of how well goaltending is played on this trip, right? Like, you could very easily have gone Vladar in this game and made an argument for it with how well he's played, and they've been alternating. They do go to Wolf. Maybe they wrap with Vladar against Dallas, or maybe they stick with Wolf. We shall see, but boy, in four games on this trip and five games out of the break, goaltending has been their number one strength.
It's almost, what's the word I want to use? It's crazy to think that with the goaltending the Flames have got over the course of the past four games on this six-game road trip, that they've only won once. Like, you've got Vladar sitting at a .942 save percentage. You got Wolf at a .926. Both goalies gave the Flames every opportunity to win all four games. And am I surprised it's Wolf? No. If it was Vladar, would I be surprised? Probably not either, because as you mentioned, both of these goalies have been lights out so far on the most important trip of the season for the Flames. It's been the brightest spot for this team coming out of the Four Nations break, is the fact that you've got two goaltenders right now that you can roll out either and expect them to almost steal a game at this point. Now, I'm not going to go that far, and like, the track record for Dan Vladar this season has been much more up and down than Dustin Wolf, but the fact that he's apparently or seemingly turned a corner over even his last three starts dating back to his final one prior to the Four Nations break, like, you're starting to see positive things from both goaltenders to the point where it is becoming more of a question as to who's going to be between the pipes, because there was a stretch prior to that Wolf had 20 of 26, one of the busiest goaltenders in the NHL over that, I think, December 12th or December 15th up to the Four Nations break. But Vladar's crack that door open a little bit where, okay, we can open up this debate a little bit more.
And you're more and more kind of against the idea of moving Vladar between now and Friday, hey?
I mean, it would depend on the offers coming in, but I don't necessarily think there's going to be a significant offer put forth. I'm not pretending to be an insider here or know what the goalie market is, but like, I just look and I see, okay, what are third, fourth, fifth? And then you weigh that against the value that he might be able to bring in terms of spelling off Dustin Wolf if Dustin Wolf goes cool for a stretch, or just simply keeping, again, I'm going to confess that I believe Dustin Wolf is still the number one goalie on this team. I don't think that's
I
don't think that's a hot take.
Well, I mean, this is the sixth game out of the break. He's starting four, Vladar starting two.
Yeah, but the fact that you can insulate a little bit, protecting against Wolf going cold or protecting against Wolf getting tired, it's great insurance to have from a Flames perspective. And if that insurance costs you not taking a fourth at the deadline, so be it. The other element I'll kind of mix in is Devin Cooley has cooled off significantly in the American Hockey League over his last 12 starts. He's got an .874 save percentage. So it's not as if Cooley's still playing at like a .930 or a .935 and is beating that door down to get NHL starts right now. I think the value of having Vladar hang around benefits the team more than a fourth round pick.
Well, and I also think having...
and having Cooley continue his busiest season in his
career.
That's
the big thing for me on top of that, is that keeping Cooley in the American League lets him continue to play minutes he's never played in his professional career, or at least not to this extent. Like, he's already passed his most games played and will just continue to get those games. And his play has dropped since the concussion and since All-Star, but you've seen a lot of really positive things from him since joining the organization. And I think him playing the minutes in the American League and not kind of just sitting as the clear backup to Dustin Wolf down the stretch, I think it serves him better so that he can come into next season. And now he's really in the mix for a full-time NHL job to start the year. And then, you know, you can make your decision on Vladar in the offseason. But for now, I'm kind of with you. Unless I'm quite confident that if a second round pick was on the table for Dan Vladar, he would have already been traded.
That's sort of the line that I think I would need. Like, don't get me wrong. If you come to me with an offer that I think is an overpay, then you start having considerations for moving on. And then that value of that insurance versus the value of the draft pick. But if we're talking about, like, Vanacek's going to back up for the San Jose Sharks tonight. Yeah, that's trade protection kind of thing. How many teams out there are there that are looking for a Vanacek or a Vladar, and what's the market? Like, I don't think it's a significant... I don't think there's 18 teams looking to solidify their goaltending position ahead of the trade deadline, so you're not going to be in a competing market for your asset. And just historically, this is kind of going to be counter to what I've just said, but historically, Vladar hasn't been a lights-out goaltender. But the fact that he's played the way he has just prior to and post Four Nations break, and what he can do in terms of insulating the tandem and insulating Wolf, I think his value is, especially if we were talking about a fourth or a fifth, his value is better served being a member of the Flames than being a long shot pick.
That's where I've been for quite some time too, is just ride it out, make your decision. If they end up parting ways at the end of the season and Vladar signs somewhere else and that opens the door for Cooley next year, so be it. I don't think it's poor asset management if you don't get a second or a third back from him for him between now and the end of the season. I really don't. I think that's a really good way of putting it. I think that the threshold kind of swings more to keeping Vladar based on what we're hearing the market is looking like right now. It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk. And our outstanding producers are Cam Hughes and Azam Ali Nanji. This is the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.